This is Decentralized, the Decentralized Trials and Research Podcast. We gather here with friends and guests to talk about the latest ways to make research and clinical trials around the world more inclusive, more accessible, more resilient, and more sustainable, all by using decentralized methods. This podcast is recorded live on Clubhouse every Friday, 12 to 1 Eastern, on the TGIF DCT show at the Decentralized Trials Club. You can join the live sessions and add your voice every Friday at noon Eastern time with the free Clubhouse app by following the Decentralized Trials Club. And of course, subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform to get notified of new episodes. Following the club and subscribing will also help you stay current for any of the bonus content we may drop. And now, it's time to decentralize.
So, good morning, good afternoon to those of you in Europe, or evening if you're even further east of us. Thank you so much for being with us, and you have landed in our bi-weekly or so live conversation where we talk about all things DCT and trial innovation with the people who are driving change in that space. And I just want to take a moment and really encourage you, if you have something you want to talk about, if you have a new publication or a white paper or maybe even a new use case where you have some lessons learned, please let us know. Just reach out to myself or Amir or the secretariat at DTRA, because we like to bring the stories that matter to our members or help you highlight the great work that you're getting done out in the world. So we try to keep this about an hour long. If you're live with us today, you will be able to ask questions at about halfway through. Just use your regular Zoom behaviors, raise your hand, or drop a question in the chat. If you're watching or listening to this next week on Spotify or Apple or any of those other podcast platforms, just reach out to me or to any of our speakers if you have a question. And, you know, tell your friends. It's not a bad listen when you're out on the road or stuck in traffic. So, Amir, thank you so much for being with us today. I'm really happy to have you with me. Got any comments before we get going into the meat?
Sure. We're missing Craig's dulcet tones. He has actually left this morning for his vacation. He was covering for me for quite a few weeks when I was traveling. So very happy to be here and be able to be here while Craig is finally going to go somewhere nice to have a vacation.
And it will be nice. I'm really a little jealous, although I'll go somewhere nice a little later today.
I will say I feel like a travel influencer, because ever since I did the Dolomites as part of my trip, I've had three friends now who are going to the Dolomites, which I'm very happy for them, because I think they're going to have a lovely time there.
I might get there, but it won't be this summer. Yeah. So I bet we'll hear some more about some fabulous adventures at CNS Summit and DTRA annual meeting. Oh, right. And that's a little heads up. DTRA annual meeting registration is going to open next week. You can find that on our website. I'm sure there'll be a LinkedIn post. Okay, so let's dive into the topic du jour, which is one that I'm really excited about. And you might even have seen Craig post about it. I think it was late last night or early this morning. I'm going to try and pull up his actual words, and we'll use that as the frame here, if I can find it. I had it open, but I think he posted something new since then. All right, so we're going to talk about bringing your own technology as a site into the trial domain today. And I'm really excited to be joined by some of the leaders of our initiative, Joe Dustin, Brandon Maggio, and probably Rick Greenfield. So here's how Craig described this topic in his LinkedIn post. I'm quoting, "Sites have never been opposed to decentralized methods that improve access for their patients. In fact, plenty of sites already have decentralized tools in their research enterprise. And today on TGIF, we're going to dig into enabling sites to bring their own technology. Maybe it's time to stop pushing unfamiliar technology onto sites if they have their own capabilities. So that's the context. Now, I will say I had the pleasure to work with this team for the past year and change. I learned a lot as we went through the process together, and I'm really excited to hear from our guests today about what they learned and maybe some of the things that they're hoping will happen based on their work. So let's get started there with an intro from each of you, Brandon and Joe. Tell us a little bit about your background and your current role, but also why did you get involved in this specifically? Joe, do you want to get started?
Yeah, sure can. Thanks, Jane. Hi, my name is Joe Dustin. I have been working in clinical trials for 20 years. I've been mostly on the technology side of the fence. I've gone between, I would say, the technology vendor side and the pharma side on both. I've been a proponent of the site experience, I think, for a long time. And especially now in my current role where I am working on a consulting engagement with tech companies and pharma companies alike, working on implementation of digital strategies, digital technology as we go into this new wave of AI powered everything. There is a rise of sites adopting technology for themselves. I've seen this for years, and I really want to get involved more with it. And when we came to DTRA to think about this initiative to build out a framework, I was very excited. So sites are doing the hard work, and we've been forcing stuff on them for so many years. I think they've had enough. And I think we've reached a red line where they can empower themselves, and we can take advantage of that as an industry to be better for everybody. So that's why I'm really excited to get involved. Yeah. Brandon, how about you?
Yeah, thanks, Joe. So, hi everyone, Brandon Maggio. I've been in the industry as well for just over 20 years now. My start in the industry, really cutting my teeth, was in clinical operations. So, I take good pride in that because I think that is an excellent foundation to inform how we modernize our ways of working, how we implement technology. And having been in the shoes of a trial manager, a CRA, it really gives you excellent grounding in how to go about driving change across the industry. The latter half of my career, so for the past 10 or so years now, I've driven technology implementation and overall change management around decentralized modalities and the utilization of different digital health technologies across sponsor organizations. Currently, I'm leading a team called Digital Operations within GSK, and that is accountable for the development of the digital health strategies and how that is implemented in a safe, compliant, and effective manner across the organization. My key value proposition and drive motivation behind this work is similar to what Joe mentioned, but it's really trying to find the next level that we can achieve as an industry to enable sites to provide participants with fit-for-purpose technologies. And those fit-for-purpose technologies, many times, as Joe mentioned, are somewhat forced upon the sites through whatever means, whether it be a CRO or a sponsor. And I think it's time to turn the tables a bit and listen to what the sites are saying. Many times we hear that rhetoric in different forums. Oh, we need to engage with sites, early engagement, get that feedback. Now let's put that feedback into action.
Perfect. Let's double click there just for a minute, because you both touched on what do we hear from sites. So, how about a little bit of context around what is the tech burden at sites and how are sponsors maybe inadvertently adding to that burden? I know I was part of the problem, so I'm raising my hand to say, yep, did that. Really hadn't appreciated what was the downstream impact of it. So, how about you get me started here, Brandon? Because I'm sure you hear it from a different lens through the GSK org. Then we'll get Joe's perspective because he's on the ground a bit.
Yeah, I think it's an excellent point, Jane. And I won't say that there's any one party that's kind of causing the issue overall. I think it's the overall ecosystem of clinical research requires different systems to be in place in order to collect, query, and manage all of the different data sources that we need to showcase health outcomes. With that in mind, how do we deploy technologies in a efficient manner to reduce the burden? And I don't think that the industry to date has really solved that problem. The latest iteration of the solution to this is how do we identify from a sponsor side a technology platform that has multiple capabilities to reduce the number of systems a site needs to use within a given clinical study? And I think that it's a good step in the right direction, but I'm not sure it's the best solution that we can come up with. We're a smart industry of colleagues, and I truly believe that there's more that we can do. So from a site perspective, I can only imagine participating in one clinical study with, let's just say, 10 different systems that they need to access. And I think I'm being nice in saying 10, but then expand that to all of the different sponsors that that one site is working with, and the burden is just unbearable, right? So that's th just to get the conversation started. I think that that's really the crux of some of the burden that we're adding.
Hey Joe, got more to add there, or maybe you got a fact? By the way, Joe just dropped the playbook into the chat. If you haven't seen it, it's right there. And I will say that was a monumental effort. So thanks for leading that work.
Yeah, no doubt. So I guess some fun facts and or other ideas we can start to cover. On average, clinical sites, some of the published surveys from ACRP, SCRS, and other organizations that represent sites and the staff that work at sites say that on average, sites have about 22 different systems thrown at them with different logins in general. I believe that number mostly is like overall with all of the studies they're running, there's like 22 different systems. Many studies use the same system, different logins in some cases, sometimes unique logins. In some cases, I have seen in one study, like 18 to 20 systems for one study. So it depends on the type of site and the types of studies that you're in, and of course, the vendors you're being used and the sponsors and how they're set up. As post-COVID and as sort of the decentralized modalities sort of to rise, with that became a fragmentation of the market, right? So we were sort of closer to platform Nirvana, although we never really got there in our industry, but in the 10-year cycles of digital adoption since the early days of paper to electronic and on-premise to the cloud, which went from the early 2000s to now, I'd say about 2017, the market broke apart again, and we're back in hyper fragmentation of many point solutions, and now we're back in the best of breed world, and sponsors and their IT teams are back in build mode. So this problem is not going to get easier as we get to determining what the burden on sites is going to be, right? And many sites are starting to draw the line right now. I think that it's starting with the bigger sites for sure. So your academics and your hospital systems and your ones that have been enabling themselves with technology for quite some time. And they've already always been trying to do this. They have the budgets, they have the staff, they have the resources. But this is trickling down now to the smaller sites and the site networks that are not so small in some cases anymore. They're growing, right? Site networks are getting bigger. They're bringing to bear, as a result of joining the network, technology, resources, expertise, support. And with that comes the drive of, we need to digitize our own operations for our own benefit. And if we do, a side product of that could be we could plug into industry and use the technology investments that we've made to work the way we want to work and provide sponsors or industry the data they need in a much easier way than what we're doing today. I'm not saying the 22 systems are going to go way down to one, but the ones that overlap, where you have sites that have enabled themselves and sponsors that are saying, use the one we want you to use, that there could be a shift there. where the ones that overlap, the sites could say, we prefer to use ours. And we have a way to plug into you that's validated, that's documented, that's as high quality as what you would choose yourself as a sponsor. You should just take our data and our connections. So the playbook that we've released as part of the BYOT initiative at DTRA, the first version of that is setting the framework for how do you get a yes from sponsors when you ask as a site, can I use my own technology in your trial instead of the one you want me to use? It starts with e-consent as low-hanging fruit to just say, I don't want to use your e-consent. I have my own. It's already plugged into my workflow. I'm responsible as a site for this task anyway. So let me use my own and I will give you the data in a number of ways possible. The first release is I'll just type it in myself. Second is I can transfer it electronically. The next wave where that goes, which is what we're into right now, with the second wave of the team, is digging into the other technologies that could be in scope. eSource probably being one of the big ones, and EISF and the reg binders at sites. How does that plug into this? And other elements that would affect a site as they get more adopted with decentralized modalities. How does that play into the way the site has set themselves up for optimal execution and quality? So.
So this is Amir. I'm going to ask you two questions, and I'm going to take on the persona of the naive person who doesn't know anything. Okay, I'm going to start with Brandon. In your intro, you mentioned the words change management. How do you think? I mean, most people kind of forget that what clinical trials are. They're an experiment, right? They're a scientific experiment where we try and control as many variables as we can. One of those being kind of technology. So, in your kind of journey within GSK, how has it been trying to kind of introduce this extra variability when people, in general would like to keep everything they, as they see it as kind of, consistent across trials, whether it be technology or, variables on the inclusion criteria. How's that been trying to sort of move folks towards being able to accept the risk of variability within site technology?
Yeah, so maybe I'll start, Amir, by saying first and foremost, I think change management is a core component to any type of modernization of clinical trial research. Certainly, we've seen that with decentralized modalities and how that's implemented in a variety of ways across sponsors. But I think what's key here is that you have a centralized team driving that change management, a group of SMEs, and I am honored to have been leading one of these teams that is high functioning, diverse in perspective. So again, leveraging experience within boots on the ground, clinical trial operationalization, and really ensuring that what we put in place in front of our key stakeholders is fit for purpose and it has been well thought through, right? So it's not just here's an idea, you should accept it and see the value proposition associated to it. No, here's the idea and here's the different components and considerations that you need to have in place. Here are the immediate actions that you would need to implement in order to remain compliant, in order to realize that value and return on the investment. So centralized team driving this change management is key, top for me. The second component is around senior leadership, and you need to ensure that that buy-in is there. And that is another level of change management, maybe even the first level of change management to ensure that they're subsequently drilling that down from a top-down perspective, but also that the study teams, the boots on the ground, see the value and they don't see it as an additional burden. So, a number of different components and considerations that need to be included there. But from a change management perspective, this is one where I love to lean on efficiency of the data flow that we need to prioritize within a clinical study. And how can we reduce the burden? And I say burden in the sense of when a site is unable to access a system that they're unfamiliar with and they're not able to troubleshoot that in a specific period of time, a short period of time, they're not able to collect the data, which is impacting everyone down the line, right? So I think leaning on those critical components around ensuring regulatory compliance, ensuring efficiency in the way that we implement technology, and showcasing all of the different personas and impact to their roles and responsibilities is critical to driving successful change across any organization.
I think what you were hinting there is if I'm a site and I have multiple studies I could enroll into, a site unfriendly technology may put me off that your study, right, and put it somewhere else. I mean, there's an incentive to make it less burdensome, right?
Absolutely. And I think, Amir, one point that I heard Joe mention is, COVID was a catalyst, in a silver lining type of definition. But many sites reacted to this. There was a lot of conversations going back and forth from a business continuity standpoint, leveraging decentralized modalities and technologies in order to keep trials going. And some sites doubled down on that. They wanted to build out their site infrastructure and put themselves in a position where they were going to excel in this space, regardless of the challenges that were put in front of them. And from a site perspective, when you put all of that time, money, resource into building that infrastructure out, and then you're not able to utilize it within clinical studies in years forward, that's really that's a tough one to digest.
Sure, and I have a question for both of you. Joe mentioned about kind of different types of sites. Clearly, the site landscape is, quite diverse. How do companies think about the risk where you might say, well, you mentioned, Joe, that large health systems, academic centers may have the resources, even things like cybersecurity, right? So how does a sponsor think about having, when they have a mix of sites, they can, giant sites, networks, and some, standalone sites, how does one manage the risk of, say, these sites that don't have the resources, that may not have even an IT person, and yet want to use their own technology? How does that variability between the sites come into play when sponsors think about allowing BYOT?
I think it comes into play as quite a bit in the decision process. First off, this is not meant to be a one size fits all approach for anything. So a sponsor should not say, well, if none of my sites are ready for this, I'm not, sorry, if half the sites aren't ready for this, then we're not going to allow it. It needs to be a hybrid approach. So if 20% of your sites in the study are ready for this and the other 80% are not, you should still allow 20% that are enabling themselves to do this process and to make life easier for both sides should allow it, right? The idea of optionality and decentralized trials for patients, I would say, applies to sites. We need to give them options. We need to meet sites where they are. Most sponsors have not yet built out the infrastructure to allow for any type of ambiguity. It's you fit into this mold, and that's it. Right. There is one process for everything, and that's an issue. So for sites that don't have the ability to do this, they just won't do it. Right. And sponsors are never going to force them to do it. They shouldn't be. What's been happening now, the status quo is unfortunately a process that we've allowed to go on for too long. Right. When we rolled out, we as an industry rolled out EDC in the early 2000s, and it really gained mass adoption by the time we hit, 2010 and onward. When it was first rolled out, I remember some of the first implementations in 2005, 6 at Amgen and Genentech and whatnot. They were some of the first to go all in. 90% of their studies were in EDC within a year. They said to the sites, "We're implementing new technology. It's going to help us. It's going to help you. We're not going to force you to change anything you do, right? We just need you to work on this thing, which will get us data faster. You can still work. We're not telling you how to work, so you can keep building your paper binders and your paper everything, and just copy it into here, and then we get it faster, and we can close the database faster." And as technology improved, we never changed. The sites never changed, right? And no one forced the sites to change because we didn't want to tell them what to do, right? Now what's happening is sites are changing themselves, and they're telling sponsors, "We would like to do this. It just took 20 years to get there, right?" And the technology improved, the standards got better, the barrier to entry came down, the cost came down, and it's no surprise AI. And the ability for the cost coming down as access to AI and whatnot, and the funding that is going toward the use of AI at sites is now creating new budgets where this all rolls into, right? And so now the incentives and the funding are now there.
So
So I
the
think sponsors, to answer your question, is they will not turn down sites that aren't ready because those sites aren't even going to ask. But eventually, I think they'll see.
Okay, now I'll ask my last question here for now. Some people say, you may have heard the phrase, that people change not when they see the light, but when they feel the heat. Brandon, is there any heat in pharma to really change to BYOT? Is there any light, or is there heat around that? Is there any incentive for sponsors to really want to change?
I think there's a great deal of incentives across all personas that we see here. The three that we really targeted within our work in this working group was around the participant, the site, and the sponsor. And from a sponsor's perspective, Amir, I think you're spot on, right? There is light, but there is also heat. The light is, yes, we see the value in all of this. The benefits are clear. This drives efficiency within our side of the organization, but the heat is also there from how do we really become sponsor of choice? How do we help to modify the way that we work to be more fit for purpose for sites, which, to your point, they're the ones that are bringing in the trial participants. They're the ones that are collecting this data from those participants. So one of the great things that I love to lean on is we can implement a technology platform. Sponsors can implement a technology platform for a given study across all of the sites, right? And it could be optionality, as Joe mentioned. Maybe this is a flexible model. It's not all or nothing. The utilization of that technology for a site will vary based upon how much input they've provided, how comfortable they feel with that technology, and the types of challenges that they've faced using similar technologies in the past. So these are some of those components that I think from a sponsor side are really being thoroughly evaluated. And the one of the more important ones, in my opinion, is from a data perspective, right? We have the ability to leverage more real-time data, more robust data sets that are new and novel, and only through an improved and optimized way of deploying technology systems and ways of working within our studies are we going to be able to even realize that.
Great, thank you. And then Jane, I know there's a lot of questions in the chat as well.
There are a couple. I'm going to share a different side of the impact of not adopting this methodology. Just it's a quick story, and then I'm going to go to a question from Archana and then Rakesh. By the way, Archana and Rakesh, you can come off mute and ask yourself so I don't mess it up. But one of the impacts to sponsors can be if you're mandating a technology at a site that already has a preferred or validated common platform technology, you could miss the window for that site to participate. So here's the real use case. The VA, which of course is a huge health system and does a ton of trials, not all of them registrational trials, to be fair, told me last year around this time they had used e-consent in more than 800 studies. And they are still approached by sponsors mandating them to use the sponsor preferred e-consent. And so they don't say no, but what they shared was the time frame for them within the VA to validate and onboard the sponsor's own technology or preferred technology rather than using what they've already been using as a norm can mean they just miss the window to even be part of the study. So that's yet another business impact that I don't know we fully have crystallized yet. Okay, so Archana wants to hear some of the input from sites about this concept. How were the people involved at sites involved in the initiative? What did they say? What did they think? So we had some site members on the team, and I know you both talk to sites all the time. Also, what might have surprised you when you were hearing from them and influenced how we thought about the playbook? So, Joe, are you in a place where you can talk about that? Maybe not. Okay, Brandon, I'll go to you.
So absolutely. As Joe responded in the chat, we utilized site feedback and participation within this working group as a core component for driving the overall position of the paper and opening the door for conversation, right? This is exactly what this white paper looks to do. Start the conversation or re-engage in the conversation now that we're at this current point in time. So we engaged with different site institutions, Mayo Clinic being one of them that I'll call out, but there were a number of others through different consortia, such as SCRS, where we really put this to the test. We put it in front of them. We wanted to hear from those sites. The esteemed colleague Jane Miles actually had the ability to do a little interactive exercise with these sites to, see what type of feedback we would receive. And of course, we took that feedback and we incorporated it into the final version of this white paper. And hopefully, when you review it and read through it, you'll see components of that site feedback throughout the entirety of it. Joe, I see you're back on camera. Do you anything else to add from that perspective?
I think we talked to a lot of sites, big and small. We're going to continue to talk to more sites in the second wave of this. E-consent was just the first side of it. I think most sites agreed that they prefer. Actually, I'd be careful. I don't want to say most sites, but many sites believe that e-consent belonged with them. And so that was an easy first win. If sites don't have one, then a sponsor would provide it. That would be the idea. In the second wave, if this where we start to dive into source
Joe,
becomes
your signal's cutting out a
a
bit
much
for me.
bigger topic, and we know a lot of the some surveys from SCRS are reaching the 60th percentile of e-source adoption, but that's not global. That is a from within a survey, which is large, but still not the whole site population. I believe that smaller sites are going to have more to say about this because it actually is going to take more work than they believe to maintain it at the level the sponsors will require to plug in. So we're going to explore that in the second way.
Can you hear me okay, or am I breaking up?
You're perfect, Jane.
Okay, so I just wanted to go back to what Brandon mentioned because actually I've had the pleasure of working with sites 2 years in a row on this question in workshops at the SCRS Global Summit. In the first year, we just asked them, what would you think about us running an initiative? We know site tech burden is a big deal. What do you think about this concept of bring your own technology? Should we focus on it? And they said, oh gosh, we would love that, but no one will ever do it, so don't bother. And we were like, wait, so you want it, but you don't think, okay, maybe that's the route we have to take. Like, what is the pathway forward? And then we took them our first concepts on what a deliverable might look like and why we started on e-consent about at the end of last September. Rick Greenfield was in the room with me, and people were super excited. Like they were like, oh, we didn't really think that was a thing that would happen. So it's early days, but we'll be going back again this year to ask for more feedback. Now, Rakesh, you have a question here that I think needs to go on the table. So just speak it, please.
Yes, no, thank you. Good to see most of my colleagues and friends. The question is, I'm a fan of this bring your own technology. I think it comes with several challenges we know. I think Playbook has nicely covered many. I'm just highlighting one critical one is around validation, right? So our sites who are ready to make this technology or wants to participate needs to gain that understanding and awareness, which is new to many of the sites around the validated state of it, because data could be refusal to accept data from regulators, because as we all know, pharma is accountable for the data, not sites. So from that perspective, what has been the experience to the panel or others on the call? What you might have seen is sites open to making that investment to do validation, to keep those systems in a validated state and allow for interoperability with many pharma companies who wants to participate.
Okay, I'm going to try my best. I think that the EMA guidance doubly calls out the sponsor accountability on all of the computerized systems for registrational data collection. That's what I think
Yes.
high level you're trying to express. Am I kind of on target? I can't hear you. Rakesh came off, it came back on camera. Maybe you have something you want to add here.
I think it's related that to my question, of course, he can add to it, but I think that was the question. The ultimate accountability on the data is sponsor. Whether we, how do you verify even on a risk-based, the system is the use from where the data is considered as an e-source or e-consent, wherever it's coming from. If it's used for a registration or submission, that data needs to be demonstrated coming from a validated system, right? With all other things that EMA and USFDA and other agencies are expecting. So the burden is still on pharma to kind of accept this data or systems from those sources. So how I think that is related to that is how sites are making sure. I think pharma will ask these questions, right? How are sites making sure their system is validated there, and they have to maintain for the life cycle of it. The study is running for 10 years, then they need to keep the system somewhere active or in that validated state for that 10 years. So the question is that investment sites will have to take on, right? To make, which is not for EHRs, these are not the requirements. So that's why we wanted to clarify, and perhaps that was the follow-up questions coming there.
I'll be honest here, and I was probably the thorn in the side of Joe and Brandon and Rick and other people, because I was like, wait now. I'm in my sponsor persona. I'm not just going to believe that you configured your system to meet all of my data requirements unless I actually go check it before you start entering the data as the sponsor, right? So validation is one thing, study build is another. And so that is the second layer that comes into play for me about the site responsibility in enabling a BYOT environment, even any consent. It's like, do you have a space for an LAR? Have you really accommodated for all the amendments that'll come, et cetera? So I hear what you're saying, and I was probably one of those people who asked all those fly in the ointment questions. That's why we built that workflow that's in the white paper that shows this is iterative and cyclic, and anytime there's a significant change to either the study config or the underlying tech, you're going to have to reconfirm all the validation parameters.
Right,
So
things
there's
to
a
think about
question
though.
over here from Vinita. I think if I can find it, yeah. How does BYOT serve integrated business process which require integrations across systems to eventually reduce site burden? Vinita, you can chime in if you want to clarify the question or point us in a specific direction.
I'm
Yes,
sorry, I
there's
was trying
different.
to get off mute. Yes, my question is regarding if sites choose their own technology for different business processes, eCOA, consent, eSource, etc. The whole objective is to, as you mentioned, interoperability. I typed that question at the same time you were talking about interoperability. How do you enable that with independent systems? And interoperability takes a lot of effort across all the software technology in order to make it truly interoperable. The integrations need to be built in. So, if sites are bringing in pieces of their own technology, how do you ensure that they're talking to each other and the data is flowing through accurately? And the whole objective is obviously to have data flow in to reduce site burden eventually. So that's where my question comes from.
I think it's a fair question for sure. It is showing that this is for sure a concept that is in its infancy because it's not redoing everything we've done over 20 years. It's just trying to shift, I think, a little bit of the burden away from the sites to give them the ability to work the way they want to work, even in an integrated scenario like you describe. I'll give you an example. Let's say it's a Crohn's disease study or some sort of GI study. I've worked on a lot of those where the integration of eCOA, IRT, and EDC together was very important, right? You have what you screen the patient, you're taking it, you're in a washout phase, you're scoring something in a diary that then goes over to the randomization system, qualifies them, randomizes them, goes over, right? In that scenario, the site is still capturing source data in their own way, whether it's in a paper binder or whether it's in an eSource system that they've implemented themselves, right? That eSource system could be part of a site CTMS or some other thing, right? And I think in this scenario, what we're doing is number one, eliminating the swivel chair thing. So similar to what the EHR to EDC part is doing, we're just direct connecting their system into the sponsor system, which then still does what it does, right? The issue there is that I think we've designed some of those integrated platforms on the sponsor side to reduce site burden on not having to do the calculations manually, not having to plug things to different systems and go. I think that there is, you bring up a very good point on like how does that evolve as well, and or does this break anything? I think in the beginning, what this does is it just removes the manual steps from the site, but still maintains your integrated platform the way you want. It's to be determined yet if it complicates things or not, but I can see where you're going. The sites still have to maintain the data in their own system anyway, so we just take out a manual step from them. I could see that in the very beginning.
Yeah, and there's a possibility that the technology that they're using on their site does not provide capability to integrate with other systems, or vice versa. In which scenario, it is difficult. It might actually pose as a burden.
I might actually argue the opposite way. Some of these site systems are actually more interoperable than the sponsor systems because they're not custom integrations. They're turn on the API and go. Why? Because they've been selling at a lower price point to sites than sponsors, and they have to do it. There's no custom integrations at sites. They can't afford that, right? So it's a turn the API on, plug in your recruitment thing, plug in your site thing, plug it. These site-based systems are, I think, more interoperable than the sponsor-based systems. Because they're a little newer and they've had no other choice. And they've done it at a much lower price point, which is actually interesting. So I think that's going to set the stage for a number of for a better interoperable state. Is to be
Why
determined,
don't we
but
hold
I'm
that
seeing
and
this.
bring that question back when we're having our Vulcan conversation? Because we may have some very differing points of view in there. So that's a good one. Thanks, Vanita. Brandon, did you have anything you wanted to add here?
Yeah, just one add-on from my perspective. I think that the topic of integration is challenging net net, right? So even when we're talking about sponsored mandated systems that are in place, interoperability and integrations with other systems is something that is not yet recognized by most as a great deal of effort, one that is nonstop, right? I think Rakesh mentioned that if you have a study that's ongoing for 5 years, you have to ensure the validation of that study through each subsequent product release during the course of that 5-year period. Same applies for integrations. Every time you have a product release, a new integration, maintenance, build, etc. is required. So integrations is a it's a great point, Vanita, and I think it's something that is remaining a challenge in the industry regardless of BYOT.
No, I completely agree with you. Integrations is a challenge, but it's also how we approach integrations, and that's a completely different
Yes,
topic,
that
right?
is a different
Yes,
topic.
agreed.
It's like, how do
Agreed.
We
So maybe for the next workshop or next webinar, just to note it, our site's open to bi-directional data flow because so
Oh,
far it
interesting.
has been only one way coming from sites to sponsor. Now, do they have the security groups have appetite to receive information from sponsored to sites on the database? Example, if I want to post a query, right? So these are the things we need to kind of try, and is an evolution again, but this is something we need to kind of see whether such bidirectional opportunities are the sides open to it or not?
And Rakesh, Jane, apologies. I'm just going to just real quick thought there. Rakesh, I love what you're saying, right? Because I think that to the points made during this call, this is just the start of the conversation. We recognize all of these challenges we've called about in the white paper. And I love the fact that all of the attendees here are flagging them again, because it showcases that we are spot on with the challenges we've called out. I think what we're trying to open the arena for is, how do we ensure that clinical trial research is not a bolt-on to clinical care, standard of care, but rather it marries it together with the systems that are already being utilized by sites for providing that clinical care, and ensure that we are driving efficiency with the data, fields, formats, and flow that we would need to have in place from a regulated perspective within clinical research.
Very good.
That's the vision. Yeah. That's not in version one of BYOT. There's one stakeholder that I'm going to call out here as a former CRA. And I just want to acknowledge that this changing landscape may change their workflow pretty significantly too. In that, instead of knowing one e-consent system, if they're handling five sites and three are using different ones, they'll have to be trained and able to use each of them and fulfill all of the regulatory requirements to do so. So what we're trying to do, and we didn't succeed in round one, is figure out, how do you reduce burden without just shoving it somewhere else in the ecosystem?
So Jane, that's not just going to be an AI agent that's already pre-trained on every e-consent system.
One hopes.
I like to say that, you know, what I love about initiatives like this, the DTR and other kind of organizations that go across industry, is that, you know, I always used to joke that sites kind of see things from sponsors as simple as inclusion criteria. And they kind of say, well, why is it this way? Why can't we do it this way? And it always felt that there were some things there were good reasons for, and there were some things there weren't great reasons for. And the sites never really understood the difference, or, you know, really the background. Same thing with, I think, on the site, on the pharma and vendor side, where historically they didn't really understand the site perspective as well as they should. I think we've kind of evolved a little bit around that. So even the vendors have site advisory groups and everything. So I think industry is trying to do a better job listening to sites. I think it's difficult for different sort of personas within our industry to really understand the perspective of others. Everyone's very busy working, whether it's the site, whether it's pharma, whether it's the vendors. So I think having any initiative that can bring these perspectives together, really trying to understand, you know, where can it work? Just like I think Joe and Brandon have explained, right? I think it's really important for us to do that, because I'm not sure anyone else does it, right? It's not, people are busy doing their jobs, and someone needs to kind of think about it more holistically across the board. So I think this is why initiatives like this are really important. So I'm really grateful for everyone that's working on it.
You said that perfectly. And it is why it's such a pleasure and privilege to work on these initiatives. As Joe and Brandon mentioned, we're literally kicking off round two yesterday. You were deep in on the scope and setting your boundaries and figuring out who the stakeholders are. So there's time if you want to raise your hand and be part of that work, but also keep asking us questions. Now you know us. And as a last request, I'll say, if you have a topic you want to hear about, or if you want to lead a discussion with other people who are thinking about it, or you have a publication you want us to know more about, please let us know. I've got a couple teed up for early September, one of which is a new white paper from the FDA on reducing safety data collection. That's pretty exciting to me. And I think we're going to invite our friends from Politico back to help us understand, how are things leveling out, or are they, in the regulatory environment sometime in mid-September. So thanks very much, Amir, for your assist today. Can't do it without you. Thank you, Joe and Brandon, for leading the charge and really taking on the hard work. Have a great weekend,
everyone. I can kick off. I think, Rakesh, it is a perfect question. A perfect question, and it's one of the largest challenges that we had really robust conversation around within this working group. You pointed it out. There are varying degrees of site willingness and ability to execute on this plan, right? If you're working with a large academic institution such as Mayo, they may have additional resource and infrastructure to accommodate the responsibilities that you outline, whereas other community-based centers just simply may not. But it goes back to that point that Joe made, that this is not an all or nothing approach. We recognize that there will be some sites fully enabled and willing to roll this out tomorrow. There are others that will not. And I think that it's important from a sponsor's perspective to see that you must provide that optionality. Similar in the way that health authority states, we cannot decline trial participation for patients just because they don't have access to a technology or to the equipment that's needed, right? This is the same premise, but on the site side. And what I'll give is a little insider nugget with regards to BYOT. Within GSK, we've actually rolled this out in a pilot phase, and the sites were the ones requesting the utilization of their own technology. So I think that you're going to see some sites coming out and really verbalizing that within the site selection process. Others will not. And it's going to take a good degree of flexibility, both from a decision-making standpoint, but also from a process standpoint, to ensure that we are safeguarding the data that we are collecting and ensuring that whatever technology platform is being used to collect data, it's validated and it's compliant.
That's actually one of the reasons a lot of the content in the document is around what are the elements that need to be included in the, let's say, validation or compliance package, which is probably going to be created largely by the vendor of choice for the site, right? And so we didn't try to put in every element, but we tried to highlight the vendor is going to likely play a role here with these sites, and it won't be a one-time only role. Joe, you look like you got something to say here.
Yeah, I think that the biggest part of the playbook that shows to sponsors what needs to happen to be able to say yes, and also to sites on what they need, is this compliance package. I call it a compliance dossier in the playbook. But Rakesh, it's exactly what you're saying. They just need to prove it, just like a sponsor system would be required to do the same, right? The difference is that I think sites will have to create these sort of trust centers or like a website that has a validation portal for their own stuff for the multiple technologies that they will use that will need to be, I don't want to say audited, but they're probably going to get audited at some point the first few times this happens, right? And they need to have people to support that. And but the documentation is, they're not writing this from scratch. They might have to organize it, but they're not going to write it from scratch. And I don't think many sites are building their own systems bespoke at the moment, especially not the smaller ones. So,
yeah, I think we have to be mindful of scalable beyond. POCs are great to demonstrate value, but I think I'm speaking now from a sponsor's hat as well, is there is a lot of squeeze we saw recently, a lot in the press, around pharma investments, right? And we need also to make sure that this is done on a preferred site so that pharma can also repeat that these are, I'm running multiple studies in that, then I can see a value. But if I'm running only a single study or a handful of studies, perhaps it's not a good investment for pharma to participate there. So I think it's a mix of both sides, a preferred sites was and preferred sponsor, where such engagements should be considered at scale.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's important to note that the idea of a network of sites that are like, there are a lot of these real world data networks and other networks that are saying these sites are enabled in a certain connection or certain methodology. I think this will change over time. Like in the beginning, it's going to be these sites are going to do it for the first time and the sponsor is going to help them be the first one to do it. But over time, that will become more standardized. And I think like one question that I wanted to bring up was, this is connected to the EHR to EDC initiative that's happening now. It's not the same, but that is laying new foundations, infrastructure standards that are going to speak the language of the sites and pull data in. This BYOT initiative is not meant for EHR systems, but we could float on top of the infrastructure being built by these EHR to EDC connections. Then the pipes are being laid. So the is the language of the sites, should we be speaking Fire HL7, all even eSource systems? I'm not sure. Or not. Basically, I think sponsors are determining, should I meet the sites where they are and pull data in, which means I, the sponsor, have to do more work and investment, or do I make the sites conform to my standards? And once again, how much burden are we putting on the sites to make this whole thing work? It's going to be a question that is going to evolve.
It's a really good segue, though, Joe. And so here's a little put this on your calendar moment, because on the 21st of August, we're actually hosting a joint webinar with Project Vulcan and our BYOT team. So think about Project Vulcan as the folks who are building those pipes that Joe just talked about. Like, how exactly do you create an infrastructure for interoperability and data flow? And when they heard what we were doing in the BYOT space, they're like, okay, that's not what we're doing, but it is so adjacent to what we're doing. We need to help each other and show people how progress is being made. So if you're interested in that, just drop me a line and I'll help you get it on your calendar. Can I go into something that Joachim brought up, please? And Joachim, please come off mute, because you'll do a better job of explaining exactly what your concern is with the EMA guidance.